welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Ryan Dunn.
And I'm Steve Marks.
This week, we have a great show on the AppFabric Service Bus. You might have noticed this gentleman, Wade Wagner, standing here with
the
us.
The Wade Wagner.
Yes. Wade is the AppFabric technical evangelist here at Microsoft, and he is going to be going over some of the questions that you have asked us in previous episodes, like, what is the Service Bus and how does this thing work? Now, before we get to that, we're going to cover the news, as always, and we will start with Steve. Go ahead.
Great. We got some news here. Ryan's not going to be able to resist. Ryan's going to want to talk about this one. Perfmon-friendly Azure Log Viewer plugin. And this is, if I understand it correctly, this is a plugin that goes with the Windows Azure MMC snap-in.
That is correct.
And lets you pull down your diagnostics data and pull it into Perfmon instead of say, Excel or,
yep.
I don't know, what have you.
So the MMC, which is something we put together to diagnose all of your, the sources that you can get in Windows Azure, essentially. So you can set up all of these collection sources, schedule the transfers, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Well, what it does is it's really a facade on sending that information into the storage system. So you're going to send it in a blob or table storage. And then what we did was we put a little wrapper around it that will allow you to download that information into Excel by default. Now, we had intentionally set up something so that people could use a MEF plugin architecture and actually override our behaviors on viewing this data once it was in the cloud. And Tom Fuller, who goes by the name of Developer Tofu, which is awesome. Anytime you can really say any foo on the end of it.
Well, his alias is like Tofuler, right?
Yeah, I would have gone with just, I have some serious Tom Fu,
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. but Tom actually went and implemented the model where it downloads from your storage account in the Perfmon-friendly format, which is like this CSV kind of thing.
It's a CSV file for the most part, yeah.
And it loads up Perfmon. And then Perfmon itself, you have all of the same capabilities that you would normally have in Perfmon, which is, you know, zoom and look at ranges and select and deselect counters. So it's obviously a very optimized performance counting or counter viewing experience. Very awesome. It's out on the same page of downloads as the Windows Azure MMC itself. So all you have to do is grab the binary, drop it into the resources directory where the main MMC resides, and bam. You have a viewer for,
and he's actually he's given all the code too, right?
So correct, and we also have the source. So you just
awesome.
It is. It's
that
very,
is very cool.
Cool.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about a SQL Azure update, Service Update 4, which has some stuff, but really the one that I think is the most interesting is database copy, which mm-hmm. is saying is sort of the first step towards sort of full backup support. In SQL Azure, this is just the ability to take a database, copy it to another database.
You can also use it to templates, right? So if you had a multi-tenanted solution where everybody had their own database, you could database online,
one.
Right? And then you would copy it and then create it on the fly.
And so this is, I just clicked through a link there that goes to a how-to about copying databases, which is actually quite detailed and talks about some of the different scenarios and gives you the actual commands that you'd want to execute to do this.
I think the only caveat here is it has to be in the same data center. So you can copy to the same machine, which is not really a machine, as we found out from a post. So
server.
Server is not a machine.
Right, so the same server, which really
makes
means.
Yeah, right. So anyhow, you can copy it into the same, or you can actually copy it to another virtual instance machine that's not a machine, that's not a server, but as long as it's in the same region, it's going to work. And it's asynchronous too, so it's not like an instance kind of thing, but obviously.
Okay, so finally, remember we just had Vittorio on the show, and
Captain Identity, please.
Captain Identity, I'm sorry. Captain Identity was just on the show, and we thought we'd also feature this week in the news a post of his, which is an infographic. See how it's a graphic and it provides info. That's
correct.
Hence the name infographic. This is about, basically, if you want to use one of these identity providers, what are your options with ACS and in your application for sort of how you can consume that from your app? That's the extent of my understanding of this blog post. we've covered everything I understand here, so I'm not going to say much more. It's something about a Cartesian product. So that's all I'm going to say.
Well, I think the red is supposed to be like the, is it the newer stuff or is that just browser-based? Is that coming in ACSV2?
Red represents the WSFed, okay. And then blue, trust, and then green,
We're missing a key. There's got to be a key. Yeah. This is why we have Wayne on the show.
Yeah, he's
actually not going to talk about anything else. He just was going to help us out with this one news item.
See
Thanks for coming by the studio, Wayne.
We should also mention that Vittoria's book that we were saying was going to be released to released to the press as soon. It's actually out.
It's out now?
So now you can
this one, right?
Yeah, you can actually buy it.
Let's buy it.
Or it could be the one with the raccoon.
Understanding Windows card space.
That's probably not it.
No. So anyway, so check this out. If you want to understand this better than I do, read all the stuff Vittoria wrote, which presumably helps to explain the graphic. But I wouldn't know because I didn't read it yet. So there you go. With that, it's about time to introduce our special guest, Wade Wegner. Now, we didn't know a lot about Wade going into this.
That's right.
So we did what everybody does. If you want to learn something about someone, what you do is you go to YouTube and you type in that person's name.
Correct.
Right? So we went to YouTube and we typed in Wade Wegner, and we came up with this. Wegner Claude. Let me just full screen that there. We won't watch the whole thing. It's 5.5 minutes, but this should give you an idea.
Yeah.
You a little. It says Joe Wegner, so I'm actually assuming this is a relative, perhaps a brother of Wade.
Because that's a valid assumption to make at all times.
Well, if they have the same last name,
if you have
they
the same
must
last name,
be related.
You must be related.
And it's impossible this guy's using some sort of stage name.
Yeah.
This is definitely the real thing. So this is the ab claw.
Yeah. It's devastating.
You've pretty much seen
that's the extent.
The remainder, the other 5 minutes of this video are pretty much the same thing. So,
But it looks brutal. I mean, how could this guy take it?
It does look. So it shows you that the Wegners
you don't
really take
them.
A punishment.
Yeah. Yeah.
This technique dates back centuries.
Yeah. The ab claw.
In the Wegner family. All right, let's stop because I don't stop now. Wait, I'm trying to pause. Okay, there you go. That's a good shot to freeze on there. That's the research we had on Wade. Now, we actually did find something else from Wade, which is that Wade... why did clicking not work on this? Okay, here we go. Wade has a blog. Here's one of the posts from... That's the actual Wade Wegner. See, yeah. It looks like that guy. So that's how you can tell.
There's also a dentist in Florida.
Dr. Wade Wagner,
which we were unclear of. Like if Wade either misspelled his name or the dentist did, so...
One of them must have. So yeah. here is a... We really wanted to, let me just turn that up so people can hear. This is how Wade does demos. This is what we learned from his blog, is complete silence except a funky drum beat
that just repeats
forever.
It's a 10-second repeat. Yeah.
So, in honor of these two pieces of information that we have about Wade, I put together this app that's hosted up at wadesfunkyfreshbeat.cloudapp.net. In honor of Wade. And this is it. It plays that drum beat.
So whenever you're giving a demo,
you can bring this up.
And you'll have the power of not only the claw.
Right. But also the funky fresh beat.
Fresh beat.
And you can mouse over them to make them color.
Oh, nice.
And if you click, it stops.
Oh.
And,
whoops. That's excellent. Awesome.
What? Now I can't. Stop. Oh, I can't start it again. Usually if you click it, it starts again. That's it. The thing's broken for everyone now.
All right, now Wade.
Anyway, okay, now that we've given Wade a hard time.
And we got to be clear, Wade has been a good sport about this.
Yep.
Now he hopefully won't claw us.
We got to be careful.
Yeah.
Although the Wegner in that video was the one getting clawed.
Oh, that's right.
It's not clear to me that he knew how to do anything himself. He was... But in actual introduction of Wade has been the man in Chicago for quite some time, working on a whole bunch of technologies. Super smart guy. We finally got him here to the mothership.
Suckered him.
We suckered him in to the Seattle weather.
Yep.
And brought him here to be our App Fabric evangelist. So
Correct. We're
actually really excited to have Wade on the team and working on cloud stuff, but not just cloud stuff, because there's a Windows Server App Fabric as well. And Wade, maybe we should start off by, why don't you just tell us what the deal is. What is AppFabric? What does it all mean?
So so thanks for that introduction, by the way, guys. That was great.
Anytime.
We'll leave it up for a while in case you didn't want to relive it.
I want to go back to
that.
Yeah. Great. So AppFabric is a term that was introduced to PDC last year. And it's really a name for two different sets of technology. So we've got the Windows Azure AppFabric, which is a set of cloud services, and Windows Server AppFabric, which is a set of services that run on-premises, so on Windows Server. And to be clear, I largely cover the Windows Azure AppFabric, so the cloud services. Ron Jacobs, whom most people probably are familiar with, covers Windows Server AppFabric. So he's the man when it comes to the server stuff.
Right.
But at any rate, so within the AppFabric, there's a set of services that are not completely complementary today. So in Windows Azure AppFabric, you've got some services such as the Service Bus, which we'll get into and talk about, Access Control Service, which you've covered on other shows, and over time, there will be additional services that will come. Whereas Windows Server AppFabric contains a cache, so a cache service, mm-hmm. and then host, so the ability to host WCF services and workflow. So today, two different sets of capabilities, but the goal and the reason for the similar naming and branding is the idea to have parity and have these things, you know, merge together over time.
Right.
So that you can have a consistent development, you know, experience, whether you're targeting the cloud or...
So it's good for people to both not be confused just because they're both called the same thing, but also to understand they're called the same thing for a reason because they serve the same kind of functions. They are coming together.
I heard the AppFabric actually runs the core of Windows Azure.
Yeah.
Is that correct, Wade?
Yes, actually, no. no, the word fabric does tend to get overloaded a bit.
So Windows Azure also has a fabric and a fabric controller.
Right.
Absolutely no relation.
So when I develop locally on my machine and emulate Windows Azure, is that the AppFabric?
Let's not confuse people more than we need to.
so we have a few. We have a few AppFabrics. So.
Thanks for coming to the show, Ryan. Wade and I will take it from here. yes. Okay. So what about what's in the Windows Azure AppFabric, I guess, is the question.
So to what I mentioned before, there's Service Bus and then Access Control Service. Since you guys covered ACS last time, or, you know, an episode prior to this, I figure what we can do is talk about the Service Bus.
Sure.
And one thing I wanted to note, too, is, you know, coming at this PDC that's coming up in, what, a couple months, end of October?
Yeah. It's less than 2 months now, isn't it? Or is it? It's right around 2 months.
Yeah. Yep. There'll actually be more information. We'll be talking about AppFabric more there as well. So
good.
It's good reason to go to PDC or to watch online.
Watch online now, unless
it's sold out already, right? So yep, it's too late.
So the Service Bus, I mean, in essence, is a relay service. So it's a cloud service that relays messages back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so you want to leverage the Service Bus when you have applications or services or components that need to talk to each other, but may not reside in the same network or the same data center and so forth. So if you have an application that runs on-premises and you want to communicate to something in the cloud, that's, you know, the Service Bus can help bridge that. But there's also use cases for the Service Bus when you don't include something like Windows Azure. So you can also do on-premises to on-premises as well. So it's kind of a general purpose relay service that runs within our cloud platform.
Right.
So, so we'll kind of break it down. In fact, we brought the whiteboard out here because sometimes it makes it a little bit easier to write the stuff up. So so an example would be like what I just gave is where, you know, we've got an application. I don't want to block this. So we've got an app right here that, you know, runs within our data center. And so let's say we've got like a WCF service standing up in front of it. So it's a service and it's, you know, working with some, you know, on-premises SQL database here. Now, the goal is we might have another application over here that wants to talk to this app. You know, so traditionally what we might do is set up some, you know, direct call to that service. But some of the challenges here is that this service probably has a firewall around it, right? And so in order to get this to work, you're, you know, punching a hole in the firewall, which, you know, exposes additional, you know, security vulnerabilities and so forth. And also when you have hundreds or thousands of applications that, you know, need to communicate, or maybe you've got a lot of services, this can get complicated very quickly. So there's definitely ways to solve this today, but it can get complicated pretty quickly.
So just remove the firewall.
Yeah, just get rid of the firewall.
Simplest thing.
No security,
turn off
your firewall. No authentication.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
trust the goodness of other users.
So the Service Bus, you know, provides a relay service to make this easier.
Yep.
And so let me get the eraser. So basically we don't want to deal with having to communicate directly there. So the service bus, you know, as I said, is this cloud service running up here, and it's called the service bus. And the way in which we leverage it here is we're gonna relay messages through the service bus, and in doing so, get around the firewall. And the way this occurs is, when you have an application that's communicating to the service bus, the very first thing you do is you'll actually establish a connection between the app or the service and the service bus. Mm-hmm. And it does it over an outbound socket connection, right? And that's important because, you know, when it's making this initial connection to the service bus, outbound sockets and so forth and ports are traditionally not blocked by firewalls.
Right.
So you can leverage that socket connection to actually go outbound. And you make it bidirectional as well. So that means that not only can you send information out, but information can come back in through that connection. Mm-hmm. And so that's the very first step, and really the secret to how this works is, you know, it uses these outbound socket connections to facilitate all the relay. And once you've made this connection, what it actually does is, you know, since it's a relay service, it does some, you know, routing internally, and then it'll actually connect and create an endpoint running within the service bus. And this endpoint is not, you know, blocked by a firewall. It's something that's actually addressable. It's on the internet. You know, it's something that this app can now communicate directly to, right? So now, instead of having to go directly to this application and deal with firewall challenges and so forth, and, you know, potentially, you know, funky NATs and, you know, having to do any sort of reverse proxying and just all the challenges here, now this application can talk to the service bus. It'll actually relay for you, and it's already got that open socket connection right here, and it's able to actually send that message back and forth.
Uh-huh.
So that's what happens. And this is actually, I mean, if you've done any sort of instant messaging, this is pretty, I mean, this, yeah, is this actually is very similar to instant messaging patterns, right? You know, because when you're using, you know, Live Messenger, there's actually a, you know, relay service somewhere in the back that figures out how to relay those messages back between all the different peers and clients.
In an IM client, a lot of times we like to send files too,
yeah,
and not just pass messages. Can we initiate a direct connection?
Yeah. So in this, what I've drawn here, we're actually relaying through, you know, the service, mm-hmm. And so there's going to be some constraints, including bandwidth and so forth, because you're relaying through someone else's service. And in many cases, you just want to use this to broker a connection and then use the direct connection between the parties. So the service bus actually has the ability to basically upgrade this relay to a direct connection between the clients. And the way that works is, on each side, since there's actually an SDK and, you know, client libraries and so forth that you'll leverage with the service bus, and part of that is this polling. What it'll do is it'll actually on either side it'll you know, hit the network and figure out, how can I get out? You know, it'll actually do some searches, so forth, on each local network. And it'll send all the information it gathers to the service bus. And it'll figure out what's the best way to pair these two services up on outbound socket connections. Mm-hmm. And if it's able to find something, it'll actually send that information down to each of the apps. And then they'll try to rendezvous with a direct connection. And if they're successful, you know, they will upgrade. And now you're you know, going directly through here on outbound socket connections. And, you know, you no longer need to relay through the service bus.
Uh-huh.
So
that's very cool.
Yeah. And so what's nice about that too is, when you relay through the service bus, you're going to pay for bandwidth, right? So if you're streaming some kind of video or something like that, you're going to pay ingress and egress. And if you upgrade to a direct connection, not only do you have, you know, a larger potential pipe, but you're also not paying for what you're pushing through the service bus any longer.
Right.
So that's a kind of simple conceptual overview of it. Now, one of the things to note here too is there's a lot of different ways in which to communicate. So you can do simple one way. So what I outlined here, let me erase some of this stuff. What I outlined here was, you know, pretty simple one way, right? Where this application sends a message to this service over here. But you can also do response request. So I can actually send a request, you know, send a request in and get the response back. You can also duplex across it, so if you have something that's chatting and you need to send information back and forth kind of asynchronously. You also can multicast. So, you know, I may want to be able to send information and have, you know, multiple listeners over here that all have services, and each of these services can be registered as listeners on the endpoint. And so by sending one discrete message to the service bus, it can then relay and multicast it to all the different listeners. So that can produce some interesting opportunities and methods where you might want to have you might want to do some sort of eventing through the service bus and so forth.
Right. Yeah, I think the last time we actually showed service bus anything on the show was when we were showing a sample that basically used the service bus to route logging messages out. And it was basically, there's an endpoint, and as if I hook my laptop up to it, I start seeing those messages. If I unhook, I don't. And it was sort of, and it I believe, supported multiple endpoints being set up so that everyone could see those logs.
That's the trace listener.
And so it's the trace listener sample. And it's very cool use of this kind of for eventing.
Yep. Yeah, so there's a lot of different scenarios here. The other thing to note, now there's a couple of step back. So from the development experience using the service bus, you know, we provide a set of SDKs. So if you're a .NET developer, there's a really rich SDK that's available that extends WCF. So if you use .NET and if you understand WCF and understand binding and contracts and so forth, it's basically a set of binding extensions that provide some new bindings that'll facilitate all the communications with the service bus.
Right. So which means you don't have to go, well, I have to make an outbound connection, and then it's actually the response to that that's my input. You just open a WCF service like you always would.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's really nice. But that means for leveraging that SDK, you need to have an application or a client that knows .NET, can talk, .NET TCP and so forth, and understands WCF. And so in the cases where you may be leveraging, let's say, Java or Ruby, or you just want to have something that's communicating via HTTP, you may not be able to leverage .NET TCP and WCF and so forth. And so there's also something called message buffers. And what a message buffer is it's a very simple queue buffer that you can send information to via just an HTTP put, and then you can have other listeners listening to that buffer and pulling information out of it. Mm-hmm. And the thing to note is really that the message buffer is all addressable via HTTP and REST. So if you have a client that can speak HTTP and REST, they can actually leverage the service bus still. So you're not bound to just using .NET applications through the service bus. So,
great.
Very cool. Now, Clemens had one sample one time where he was connecting, actually, a video streaming service. I'm talking about Clemens Vasters, if our viewers don't know who that is. But Clemens, who works on the AppFabric service bus team, he had this app that actually streamed video from Germany. I'm sure it's completely legal. from Germany to him on his laptop so he could watch... I'm sure German soap operas or whatever it is
that Clemens watches.
And so he made this. He built something called Portbridge, and so what Portbridge is it's a set of services that can sit in two different areas, and it'll tunnel information through the service bus. So in the case where the service bus traditionally, when you're using WCF and so forth, is doing soap over HTTP, soap over TCP, things like that. But there might be times where you have an application that uses a protocol that you either can't switch or you don't want to switch to use, soap over HTTP and TCP. And so you might just want to take that protocol and actually push it through the service bus. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of a tunneling use case and scenario. And so Portbridge, basically what it does is let's say you've got a server here with a, let's say on this side you've got SQL Server. And what Portbridge does is it creates a service that sits right here. And this service actually connects to the service bus. And then what it'll do is it'll forward along any information that comes through. So in the case, let's say it's named pipes, if anything comes through, it'll just forward it along to the local SQL Server at 1433. And then on this side, you may have, let's say this is a, an application sitting in another data center, and maybe it's just a web app, and it's got a connection string specified in it that's calling to a database. What it's going to do is it's going to call to port 1433, and there's going to be another agent sitting here listening on port 1433, and anything that it picks up, it's going to push through to the service bus. It'll relay it across, push it over to this agent, and then it'll relay it right through. So basically, it's taking that SQL protocol and just tunneling it straight through the service bus. And of course, it's bidirectional, so you send the request through and you get the data back. So it basically gives you opportunities to bridge different networks without having to change the protocol stack. So,
awesome. Yeah. Very cool. Well, do you have some samples on how this works?
Yep. Yeah, we'll show you some demos. All right, so I'm going to show a couple of demos here. The first one...
I thought you needed that to demo. Sorry. Just, no, go ahead.
Thanks, yeah. I appreciate it.
It's good.
No, see, when this is playing, I don't talk. It's nice.
All right.
Fine. All right, thanks.
Go ahead.
All right, so the first...
No, okay. No.
No, but seriously, go ahead.
Okay. So the first one is actually a demo that comes from the samples that are part of the SDK. So if you, when you download the Windows Azure App Fabric SDK, one of the downloads is a set of samples, C Sharp and VB. And definitely take a look at them because the samples show basically almost every single binding extension that's used with the service bus. So it shows you how to set up the listeners, how to use that binding extension, et cetera. So very good demos. And what you'll note, though, is that they're all pretty much service hosts running in console apps, which is good and bad. It gives the impression that the only way to leverage the service bus is within the console.
Oh, it's not?
No. And I'll show you a demo later.
Wow, I'm glad you're on the show. But
it also makes it easier to get to the heart of what it is you're trying to.
Right.
So the first one I wanted to demo was really something that highlights how and when a connection is upgraded from a relay to a direct connection. So you've got a client and a service and a server, and the client sending information to the server. At some point, it will upgrade to a direct connection, so it's no longer relaying those messages through the server. And so take a look at it. It's the direct connection sample. And when you run it, let's just go ahead and run it. What you're going to have to do is provide the credentials that's, you know, basically tells it what your slice of the service bus is. And that slice is called a service namespace. And so within the service namespace, you can set up, you know, one or more endpoints that you can connect to.
And how did you get this namespace? I mean, that's from going to the web portal.
Yeah, so if you go to appfabric.azure.com, if I can type. This is the Windows Azure platform portal. And, you know, I log in. So I don't know if you guys have ever showed it, but you know I'm logging with my Microsoft credentials. So the login experience.
I don't think we've ever showed the App Fabric portal, but
okay, well,
Windows Azure portals on quite a bit.
But we'll
do this real quick,
right?
Yeah. But yeah, so you come up here, you've got your account and your projects, and what you do is you can actually provision new namespaces, and it's as easy as just saying add service namespace. Mm-hmm. You could say, I wonder if cloud cover is taken.
Probably not.
Yeah, look at that; it's available. Sweet. Choose a region and create it now. I very quickly went through that. There's different connection packs based on how you anticipate to leverage the service bus.
Right.
That's a whole separate show. There's good frequently asked question documents on that, so I'll let that cover it. But now, once that's done, you see it's activating, and it does it pretty quick. And so now I've got a new slice on the service bus called, you know, cloud cover.
Okay.
And you know, it's addressable via cloud cover and so forth. So, and when you come here, it's going to give you some information now. I might as well just go ahead and say, when you connect to the service bus, you actually are using the access control service to authenticate. Mm. And so you can authenticate three different ways, through shared secrets, which is really kind of username password-ish. In this case, it's actually called an issuer name and an issuer key, which are specified here in the portal. Okay. And that's what I'll be using within the demos. So at least now there's some continuity, because I'm going to just use those issuer names and keys. So there's, you know, that shared secrets. There's also the simple web tokens you can leverage. And then you can also do unauthenticated. So you can actually have a service endpoint that doesn't require any sort of authentication.
Yep.
Okay.
And so, yeah, but at this point now I've got a new service namespace. In fact, we can even leverage this stuff in the demo. So I'm just going to quickly copy this. All right. So if I come back to my console app, service namespace, that's cloud cover. This issuer name by default is owner. You can change that if you need to. And then I'll go ahead and paste in that issuer key. And so what it's doing now once I've hit enter is it's actually, you know, getting the token from the access control service. Once it gets that token, mm-hmm. it'll set up an endpoint on the service bus passing in that token. And it's connected. So now if I come back to my client and actually run the client, I'll give it the same credentials.
Sorry, so that was the server.
Yes.
Establishing that connection, registering
Correct.
The endpoint
yep.
within service bus.
And you can actually see
now we can just connect to it.
Yeah, you can see the endpoint right here. It actually uses SB to designate service bus as the protocol, and then cloudcover.servicebus.windows.net/hello service. So
and hello service is somewhere in that code.
Yeah,
that's the name that you
exactly. Yep. Yeah. And so now when I come in here, let me put the secret. go. So what it'll do is once it then is able to authenticate to the service bus, it's going to sync up to that endpoint, and you can see it start sending messages. So this is just an example of it just pushing a lot. Also note that it did specify upgraded. So that upgraded is just a flag that when the connection actually stops relaying through the service bus and starts communicating directly between the different, peer-to-peer between the different apps, it just flags it by writing that out to the console app. So this is what you get with the samples in the SDK. There's a lot of samples. They're really useful. They're pretty simple, and they really focus on one particular thing rather than a overly right. complex reference application. But useful stuff. Go ahead and close this. So this was just one way. I wanted to show one other demo real quick that shows how to multicast. So we talked about being able to multicast and do some sort of eventing over the service bus, which actually is pretty useful if you think about the fact that you may have clients running anywhere in the world. How do you send some sort of an event to that client to let them know something is up? And multicasting through the service bus actually is a pretty useful way to do it. So again, in this case, this actually takes the context of a chat application. So you have X number of people connecting to this chat service, and you want to be able to send the messages to everyone. I'll remember it this time. Cloud cover, owner, secret. All right. And then cloud cover, owner. Thank you. It would be funny if I did that again.
Yeah, I was actually sort of rooting for it. I was trying to think of if there was a way I could get you to do it.
All right. So you see, while I was setting up that other one, Wade 1 joined the chat here, Wade 2 joined the chat, right? Mm-hmm. And so now at this point, basically what's happening is it's just broadcasting this information from either party to that service bus endpoint, and then everyone that's listening is receiving it, including the sender. So if I say, hi, Wade 1. You can see how it'll actually respond back to both sides, Highway 1 on either side.
Right.
And this sample here is not upgrading. It's not using direct connections. It's relaying everything through the service bus. But it's a really good pattern. One thing, maybe we can put it in show notes, something like that, is I actually have a more real-world scenario called Unleash the Hounds. And actually, there's a callback to Steve here on a thread,
yep.
Basically, where how would you notify X number of worker roles to do something? And not wanting to leverage polling or something else, a nice way to do that is have each worker role set up as a listener on the service bus and then multicast that information out to them. And instantly you're able to actually send a message to every single worker role telling them to do something.
That's so cool.
Great.
So we've been using console apps here.
Yeah.
And you can obviously host this in something other than a console.
Right.
You're saying that as though you didn't just learn that like 5 minutes ago.
I know. It's
this
crazy.
Is the first time. Now you're like an expert. Oh, you could totally use it without console apps.
Yeah. I've heard that you could do it in WinForm apps too.
Yeah.
Well, I think probably more common scenario is with IIS. So you're using IIS and you have a service running in IIS and you want to take that service that's hosted very traditionally in IIS and expose it as an endpoint on the service bus.
All right.
And so what I've got here now is a sample that basically Echo Sample is just a web application, and I've got a WCF service in here. Nothing fancy about it. It's got a service contract here that just specifies, hey, got a method get data. In fact, this is pretty default stuff. And then I've got a
this is the like right click add service.
Pretty much, yeah. And
90% of the WCF services ever made.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to confuse people by getting too specific in the scenario.
No.
Not a criticism of your iEcho choice.
Thank you. So very standard WCF service, and basically, and I have a blog post that I think we can share that really walks through how all this works. But in nice. Thank you. In the web config file, if you go to the service model.
No, go on.
Take a look at the service model. You'll see really how this is functioning. And so you've got a number of endpoints here. Mm-hmm. And I actually have two different endpoints that register on the service bus. So you can see here I've specified the address. That's wadesdemo.servicebus.windows.net. Mm-hmm. And it's set up with the name Echo Service HTTP. And then I've got a comparable one still pointing to the same contract, so it's the same service, but this one uses NetTCP. So one is HTTP, one is NetTCP. Mm-hmm. And it just shows the same service is exposed with two different protocols through two different endpoints on the service bus.
Right.
And really, to get this to work, what you need to do is add a reference to Microsoft Service Bus, make sure that you're leveraging the right binding extensions, and basically run the service. And when the service is activated, when that request comes into the service, it will connect to the service bus, again, negotiate everything that it needs to, and then it is addressable on the service bus. So if I hit F5 here, what it's going to do is just call the local service. And I do have this running through IIS. It could also run in, Cassini or, more development, a development web server. And so it's running, and the way I can kind of test this too is I can actually say wadesdemo.servicebus.net, and you can actually see that up here I've got the two different endpoints.
Right.
The reason I can actually see these endpoints is there's also a service registry within the service bus, so that when you start up the service, you can say, hey, add me to the service registry, which makes it discoverable through this Atom pub
right.
feed. So this is not by default, but you can very easily set this up.
This is awesome.
And so the one last thing is I do have a client here that we can start up, and I'll use this. Now I make sure to grab my key, not your cloud cover key.
Everyone take note of that.
Yep. Everyone write down that key.
And actually, you know what? It looks like I had it hard-coded already, so that's even easier. And so here's the service. It looks like it's already connected, and I'm just going to echo. And if you take a look at the service, basically it just sleeps for whatever number you send, and then it'll echo it back. So I'm telling it to sleep. The first time it actually is still negotiating the connection, so it's a little bit longer, but you can see, if I put one, it's really fast.
Yeah, it's instantaneous,
so, yeah. So.
All right. Well, thank you, Wade, for giving us the skinny on the service bus and helping us understand what the App Fabric actually is. This leads us to the time where we have to come up with our tip of the week.
Everyone's favorite time of the show.
Favorite time of the show. I think, obviously, we're going to have some sort of theme with Wade on it. We did one for Vittorio. We'll come up with a theme for Wade as well. And with that, here's your tip of the week. Now,
all right.
We actually found out about this tip from Wade a few weeks ago. I think we even featured it on one of the news items on the show. We may have.
That's true. We may have covered it.
But it's good to go into a little more detail because I think we're pretty cursory on it. Wade also has an updated blog post on it. Why don't we bring that up and just go ahead and talk about it?
I'm not going to do it left-handed. You can do that. But this actually, and this comes straight from actually where we just ended with the demo, right?
Correct.
Which is, well, great, you can put these things under IIS, and then basically the question is, how do I get started in the first place?
We have a chicken and an egg scenario.
Exactly, well, right? Like, I have to make an outbound connection before I start receiving anything, but until anyone calls me, my code's not active, right. So how does that all work?
Well, so kind of stepping back a little bit, with IIS and Windows Activation Services, the host actually never activates until that first request comes in, right? So you notice when I hit F5, it actually loaded up that service, and so that initiated the service, and as part of it, it connected to the service bus and, everything.
So that's
ran.
A solution. You just have to browse to that service endpoint.
Exactly. Someone every morning just hits F5.
Run it on your laptop with F5.
right. But it's a real problem because if you have a WCF service, how are you going to activate it? And actually, with IIS 7.5, there's a whole host of solutions now, and in this first blog post right here to host WCF services, basically I gave the exact same demo I went through with source code, so you can take a look, but I provided a solution using auto start capabilities within IIS, and so basically use the application warm-up extension for IIS 7.5, you specify the service that you want to automatically start, and then anytime the app pool recycles, it'll just warm up that service for you. And as part of that warm up, it initializes and it'll make that connection.
Great.
So that's what we talk about here. So that gets around that chicken and egg scenario. So it starts it up, you've got a connection, and now people can get to that service through the service bus. My more recent post really is how to leverage a Windows Server App Fabric. I won't play the video, and there's no
we
overbeat.
Can fix it.
Thank you. And so here what I did is it's basically the same scenario, but instead of using the application warm-up extension, it's using Windows Server App Fabric auto start capabilities, which, you know, now we're leveraging Windows Server App Fabric to take a WCF service and expose it within the Windows Azure App Fabric.
See, that's why they're called the same thing.
Yeah,
there you go.
So for this scenario.
Well, this is a great tip. Wade has obviously a ton more detail out on the blog post.
Yep.
And we will link to all of these, of course, as well as Wade's funky fresh beat, .cloudapp.net.
And critical app for critical productivity.
If you have some feedback for us on the show or more questions that you'd like to know about the Service Bus, please send it to us. We have our Twitter's account at Cloud Cover Show. Wade has his. He's a Twitter user. What's your handle?
Wade Wagner.
Wagner.
So not
Wade Wagner, but yeah, Wade Wagner.
Not Dr. Wade Wagner, the dentist.
The dentist. And not Joe the Claw Wagner. anyhow, thanks again, Wade, for coming on the show and being an awesome sport. So yep. With that, I think that's it.
Yep. Thanks.